I really believe that my biome, so all that like yummy, wonderful, everything that makes me up that lives just off my skin and on my skin, when I'm working with someone, is then excitedly connecting to that person's biome.
In the field.
I think of them as like a million little conversations whispering to each other, like, okay, you know, this is what you remember and this is what I remember.
Of stories and songs, emergent strategist and pleasure activist living in the land of the Shikori, Skurure, Tuscarora, Eno, and Lumbee peoples. And this is our podcast, How to Survive the End of the World, where we're learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, I'm including my sister Autumn, who's currently on sabbatical. I miss her so much. And in her absence, and basically this was her idea, but in honor of my book, Fables and Spells, I'm going full witch this season and having conversations with some of my favorite witchy people. I will also be reading you little bits and pieces from the book as we go through. What I mean by witch is people who work with the elements of the natural world, including our human nature, to generate more possibilities. Witching is engaging the essential natural world with magic, supernatural, and/or healing intentions. Some names for what I am including in witch work: shamanism, sorcery, seeing, healing, herbalism, midwifery and doula labor, root work, conjuring, ritual and spell casting, astrology and divination, sound baths, altar building, song channeling, building a direct relationship with the realm of the ancestors, the spirit, the holy, the ethereal, and us. And, you know, as I'm talking to the guests that I have here today, I'm like, oh, it's also like moving spirit directly through the body. So I'm going to talk about that. But the guest I have today, I'm so geeked out about. Her name is Aisha Rashid. Hi, Aisha.
Hi.
So Aisha is officially formally co-director of Southerners on New Ground. But in many ways, the way I know Aisha is as a healer, as a body worker, as a witch who knows how to come into a space and clear out anything from it that's not supposed to be there, someone who's in active relationship with her ancestors and with those who are around her here. And we have, gosh, we've been doing work together for a long time, Aisha. Like, we've really been in the like long run. You know, I think of us as Katrina babies. Like, Katrina friendship is where we were rooted. Yeah. And I've learned so much from you and with you. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful you're here today.
Aww, I'm so glad to be here. And yeah, you've been a consistent thread throughout a long transformation. I think Katrina is a huge break point of my entire spiritual practice. So, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I'm like, wow, we really, something shifted for many of us in that moment and continues to shift. we continue to learn.
Yeah.
So I adore you. And I'd like to start off our interviews always with, how are you right now today? Mm. Like, bring yourself into this present moment with us and with our listeners. Mm.
I am remembering hope out of a time of thin, where hope felt distant. And it still feels like it's breaking forward in like flowers in spring. Like, I don't know if they're going to be there. Or my vine on my front porch that every year we have to cut down is just part of its ritual, is to cut it all the way down and then anxiously await its return. Like, is it coming back? Until it takes over the porch. So I feel like that's where I'm at. And trying to get more emotionally lubricated after feeling a little bit emotionally ashy, honestly. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Emotionally ashy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, That's such a visceral visual. I'm like, I know exactly what you mean. The dust is settling. So I feel like my spiritual practice right now is doing this like matchmaking work where I'm like, okay, like you gotta go meet Kathy White Wilson. Like you gotta go find like there's just you gotta find Yolanda. Like you gotta go
Yeah.
find like other recent, I'm like, oh, David Blair, like y'all need to sit down and talk. So I think there's a way that I'm like sending my spirits towards each other too, and just being like, y'all would have a time. Like, I know you're gonna be running straight for Baldwin, but like there's a lot of more recent ancestors who I want you to check out. Yeah. So I'm really grateful when I looked on the schedule and saw that it was you today. I was just like, yes, I know Aisha, and I know that we can always talk about anything, anywhere, anytime, and that's such a comforting feeling. So I want to start out by saying I know I'm using the language of witch, and I'm talking to a lot of people who maybe call themselves witches and maybe use other language for themselves. So that's the first thing I want to ask you is how do you identify the work that you do?
I mean, I do claim the word witch. I think I claim it. Yeah,
I
because I
know.
think it's about being in relationship and right relationship to the more than human world and seeing magic and witnessing it. So I think, and it's also to me a very, it's reclaiming a feminist practice, reclaiming, or a non-patriarchal world where, where I think women, people, and people who move through the world as women have been called witches in so many ways. And I think, yeah, I'll claim it. Like I claim lesbian, I'm in that lineage. But I also often say of myself that I am a baby shamana, which I'm starting to more learn to say I'm an emerging shamana, which I think is
Yeah, I was like, baby
baby
shamana.
shamana. Exactly. And I think I always, I started off
What's the distinction for
between
you
baby and emerging.
between, yeah, emerging? I mean, I can guess, but I want to hear for you how you're what you're learning there.
I think I often in talking about spiritual practice and talking about magic work and talking about these things that have been hidden but also nurtured in me, I think I have to learn. And so that's where the baby comes from. Like, I'm just a baby. I don't know enough. But I think emerging is recognition that actually I do know a lot. And I have practiced a lot. And I am, in fact, often asked and called to show others. And so, while being in the first line of babyhood is a beautiful place, like no shade, and I like to be there, I mean that I'm always learning and like always growing outward. I think emergence is like something that is opening. And so I think emerging feels more, like more true than I don't know anything and this is my very first day, which is not accurate for where I am,
I really like that. And you said shamana.
So meaning a shaman, meaning one who really devotes themselves to the study of spiritual practice, not just in the mind, but in the physical. Like, I'm practicing by sitting, I'm practicing by slowing down, I'm practicing by watching this orchid bloom, which is gorgeous. I'll show it to you at some point. I'm practicing by how I do, not just like it's a who I am in the world, not just a tasks that I complete or projects. So I think that's what I think about. And I also locate shamanism as connected to pre-colonized ideas of a way of being, to, what some people say, animistic practices. So recognizing the spirit of life in all things. And so I think that's I wonder if witches in the earliest use of that word would have called themselves shamans, and if the shamans would have called themselves witches. Like, I imagine a convention where they were using those words interchangeably. But I think shaman calls me to an Afro-Indigenous lineage, as well as I think witching recognizes a universal acknowledgement of magic that is, you know, often associated with a more European lens of things, but is, I think, all of our collective power. And I'm those things. I am African. I am First Nation Turtle-eyed and Indigenous. I am European descendant. I have all of those places mix inside of me in an alchemy that makes me.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's such an interesting thing. Anytime I try to reach for something broad and claim it and insert myself in it, right? I feel like it's one of the ways I always learn, what is all of this? Like, what all is in here? And then sometimes, you know, being like, I'm going to define it myself. I'm going to define what I mean by it and let that be, I'm like, in this container of my life, it's this. Anyway, I think that that's, for me right now, a way of working with words that gives me some peace. I love this piece around like shaman and witch and interchangeability and possible distinctions. I love all of it. This is really good. And yeah, I do think I'm like, you know, I was also like, was it just medicine people, like people who come and bear some medicine, hold some medicine, see some medicine? You know, I think there's many ways to call this work. And part of me is always also like, what is the most political way to call this work? What is the way that is like, you want to silence this aspect of me? I'm going to turn it up, you know? So you want to silence the woman of me? She's going to roar. You want to silence the witch in me? I'm going to sing every spell. You know, it can't silence me. You'll actually catch more of my power that way. So when did you first realize that you were drawn to this shamanic path? When did it first call you?
There's so many wins. I think one is very babyhood. Like, I have distinct memories of, one, I was raised Muslim, and in the Islam that I was raised in, we had an acknowledgement, and my parents really gave me the gift of understanding this unseen world called the Gain that is right next to us. So the imagination of another dimension. And as a child, I was just like, they're everywhere. Everywhere there are beings that I don't always see, but I bump into. Like, I knew that, and both because my parents told me, but because I felt them. Like, I would, you know, I dreamed true as a child, meaning that I would wake up into a paralyzed world of, like, where I couldn't move my physical body, but where I could see all of these beings. If I looked quickly off the corner, I would see, like, you know, a jackrabbit. You know, I would see these creatures. And my parents were really, like, kind of quietly supportive. Like, they weren't really actively like, this is magic, but they were like, there's all kinds of things that you don't know about. Allah is, you know, magical. Like, Allah is all powerful and anything is possible. So I feel like that. I also practiced mind control as a child. And by that, I mean, I think I knew myself. I think what it was is that I could so lock into a kind of empathetic stance with people that I was close to, especially my mom, that I could be in communication in thought. And I didn't, you know, I used that in ways that one might as a child who loved ice cream, mostly to try to get her to buy ice cream.
You're like, be like, come on. Our mission is clear. Our mission is very clear. Come on, mama.
But also as a survival tactic, because I was raised in a household where it wasn't always okay to ask for what I wanted or to say my needs or be loud. And so I became really practiced at quietly asserting myself in this way that was, you know, I've had to unlearn some things about it as I've grown in my powers. But now I understand those things to be the earliest. And my brother and I made spells together. We made potions together. We come from, I believe and feel clear, a line of medicine makers and medicine carriers who often found the medicine that they knew to bring becoming poison as it became like addictive substances and drugs and abuse. And so I understand that. And even as a very young child, that was just a way we played, was to make a potion, to make a poultice, to make a thing. But
I love that.
Yeah. Like, baby Aisha. Actually, my brother and I have these matching little pictures that we bought at a thrift store together of a little boy child and girl child in indigenous garb who were medicine people. And we each had them in our rooms. And it was like a thing. Like, we very much grew up being clear that there's something about that for us. Yeah. And I should say that my brother, who has passed, is also a Scorpio. So we were a Scorpio duo. So that, you know, created a lot of a lot of opportunity to go. A lot of magic making between the two of us. So, but I think where I came again into a conscious awareness was when I became a body worker. And that was driven, like many body workers I know, by my own pain and crisis, like healing crisis. And the healing crisis that I went to drove me into body work and led me directly to one of my most enduring teachers, Dr. G. Love.
Who we've had here on the show.
So excited. And she, you know, was this incredible, immense being, and already, I mean, I met her painting the map of Africa at Jazz Fest, and people had told me about her, and I pretty immediately found myself falling into an apprenticeship with her, which I didn't understand that to be for like a good 10 years, but just knowing that I was going to be touching people's bodies and people around me saying, you want to not just be doing the technical part of that, but understanding how you can be a healer, like not just someone who massages someone. And there's something beautiful about just a straight up massage. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's lovely. But being a healer is another layer. I connected with her and began to kind of follow this person around who did all kinds of wild magic in public. And I was like, okay, I want to do those things. I want to notice the moon. I want to be registering these cycles in the world and in life. And, you know, she taught pretty early on the practice of thanking and apologizing to water, and like just consistent practices that reminded me that I am a part of a whole earth system. And as such, I am connected to that, which is magic. And just the existence of this whole ecosystem, this whole planet, is astonishingly magical. So I think that was a place where I got more, like, in conversation with her and others who gathered together for equinoxes and things like that, the courage of saying, like, oh, I'm a witch, actually. Like, I want to wield this magic on purpose, you know? So.
Beloved listeners, many of you already support this podcast of ours. And so this message is first and foremost gratitude to you all. Thank you so, 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 so much. We really couldn't do this without y'all. And it's an invitation to those of you who listen on the regular and might not have become a patron yet, that this really is a community effort at this point. We don't get funding for this from anywhere else. We don't have grants or anything else supporting us. and we don't do advertisements, which has been a political choice that I think is the right one for us. And I think it allows us to be more present with you all without having to bend and weave and figure out like which products are the most apocalyptic. The question that I'm here to ask you is, would you mind slipping over to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow and putting a dollar on it? You know, you get access to our Ask Us Anything exclusive content. We're already brainstorming and planning on other exclusive content to offer through that space. And you get merch, really cute things that we send you because we made them just for you. So go on over, see what you can do. We really, really appreciate it. We're full of gratitude for you. And yeah, let's get back to our show. So you've told us a little bit here, Dr. G, you know, about moving into this apprenticeship. Because the next question I have is really, is there a formal lineage to the way that you do your work? Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, yes, there definitely is. And is there more you'd like to say on that? Like about other teachers, about other ways you've come into the practice, and or if there's pieces that you really found intuitively that have been persistent aspects of your practice?
Yeah. Well, I think definitely learning with and through and apprenticing Dr. G is a huge part of my lineage, both in the mm-hmm. Pachacuti Mesa tradition, which is a specific kind of altar building, a world transformative and healing altar building practice that I really count on, rely on, use consistently, mm-hmm. come back to. It's like a touch point. And also mm-hmm. in Reiki practicing. So mm-hmm. Dr. G was, I actually began getting to know her as a apprentice, as a student of Reiki. And so that lineage, so the lineage that she's a part of, which I'm now woven into and have been able to bless it, have been blessed to be able to pass on to others, mm-hmm. is a part of my lineage. I think the other places are more like my Islam is actually this weave through. So uh-huh. I think, you know, as I began, well, actually, let me back up and say one other thing. Hmm. I've wanted to study religion. I was very interested in like the philosophy of religion. Why do people, what is this thing that brings people together but also tears us apart? What do we mean by religion for a long time? And so as a journalist, because that was how I like to approach it, I was like, I will study this. I will learn by doing reporting about religion as a third space, as a place where we are connected. And in that process, I ended up exploring a lot of traditions or religions that people might think of as minorities in the U.S. So not necessarily mm-hmm. small, but here, including a lot of pagan tradition, a lot of that kind of world. And one of my earliest explorations of this was to like just spend some time with like a pagan circle who were regularly gathering and like writing about sort of a rise of pagan tradition. And by that, we really meant earth-based religious traditions in college.
Okay.
So that was like another place that I found myself. I often studied stuff as a journalist, like because I really was interested in it. But I could go under the cover and being like, I'm just here as a reporter. Don't worry. Don't mind me.
Let me just check it all out.
So that's another thread, was this kind of like intellectual, philosophical, like what is good and evil? What do we mean by those ideas? That is one of the self exploration places that I went to. And in that, also shoring up my, you know, I had lived as a Muslim child in mostly non-Muslim settings in all kinds of rural places in the United States and felt often othered, but also proud of being separate. Like my family was very like, we are different and that's good. And so anything that was like that, different and proud, I was like drawn to.
I'm here.
I'm here for it, yeah. And so I think that was a piece of how I got kind of drawn into and toward Ifa-based traditions, which turn out not to be my particular path. Like, I don't feel called to my own, you know, to study deeper, become an initiate, but I respect and admire so much. And looking at those practices as something older than anything else that I have known was very powerful for me. Like, I was like, oh, there's paths, there's many paths, not just the three that we get told about, or the kind of one with asterisks two and, you know, like, it's like, we're Christians and there's some other people. It was really profound for me too. But yeah, I think those are the main places that I draw from. And then I have to say, like, in a very intuitive and powerful way that I only sometimes understand in reflection is my mom.
Oh, wow.
Who didn't name herself as a magician or spiritualist or a witch. And I don't know if she would have in life. But she was a food healer. So she made, I mean, this is a person who taught herself to make the most glorious, like, foods not of her own cultural practices or her own upbringing. Like, I ate seitan as a child, made by my mom's hand, before I knew what the hell that was. You know, like, we were those, like, black children who my mom fed us only whole foods, only non-processed, only made from hand. And basically, I now understand, held my, like, healed my father's cancer such that he lived for 2 years when his prognosis was 6 months through food.
Wow.
Food and juice. Like, she, she, patriarchy made it such that I didn't get to fully understand that as a child. But in retrospect, I'm like, oh, this is a person who was, you know, like the mom and, oh God, what's that movie? The Casita. I'm not going to remember it.
In Encanto,
when the mom is like feeding people and healing them, that was my mom. And I realized that was the kind of medicine that she worked and the kind of magic that she worked. And so I have to name her as a piece of my lineage, even though I think it's taken this whole circuitous journey back to her to bring me that understanding.
I love that. I feel like we do get given these lives that are actually incredibly ripe with everything we need to know, but it's like having the time to slow down and look at all of it and just be like, oh, this is what this was. Yeah. That's what that was. Yeah. And I love thinking about just, I'm like, and this is how old you were figuring this out while I was already here. Wild.
Totally.
That's wild.
Yeah.
All right. I really love that. All of those lineages pouring in. I think that's also part of what I've been interested in with doing this series of interviews. It's like, there's not one lineage for how you become a person who can hear and feel and move energy. And I think it behooves us to start to understand ourselves in a larger net. Like, I'm like, there's actually so many people working with the unseen. Yeah. There's so many people conjuring and spell casting and cooking and singing and like doing what they can to keep their folks well. And that gives me a fractal hope that is really necessary when it seems very like overwhelmingly like, oh my gosh, what the hell? And I'm like, yeah, but a million gazillion people are casting spells to move us through this.
Right?
And that gives me hope. So what are all the ways that you do your shamanic healing witchy work?
You know,
but I have to say, even as I ask that, my whole body lights up like, you know what she do, you know what she do. My whole body is like, you need to go see her right now. You need to get on the table and like ask her to remove some demons. Yes. Anyway, so I just have to be transparent that that's what happened inside my body as I asked that.
I love that question. Well, I feel compelled to say one thing, though, before I go there about what you just said about the mini weaves. And I think, like, also essential to magic. Like, it is about being at the intersection between things and pulling from many directions. So I think, yeah, of course, we come from many lineages because that's how it happens. So that's just making me, that's downloading into me right now. But yeah, how do I practice? So I'm definitely an altar builder. So that means I keep an altar for myself in my practice. I build altars for projects that I'm working on. Like as co-director of song, I've tended an altar specifically for song work, you know, throughout pretty consistently. And bring, like, listen to the altar. So I think altars are both about a place to connect to the unseen world, but also to hear back from. It's like a telephone, kind of, where it's like, oh, I'm sending this message. What you got back? A place to hold things. So I do a lot of that. As a facilitator, I think my witching and magic shows up in, like, as you already said, in clearing spaces, like the physical ground, thinking about how people connect to each other. So how are we in a physical space that contains our bodies fully? How are we paying attention to what our bodies are doing in order to bring ourselves fully in the room? And so it looks a lot like that. I think because I'm a body worker, I'm often noticing how people's bodies are showing up. Which, side note, I think is one of the challenging things about Zoomlandia is that I feel like I have only a partial read. So I'm only hearing a part of the story. I'm like, I only hear part of you.
I'm like, oh, I don't know what's happening below your shoulders.
You know, or how you stand up when you walk around. Like, what's going on in the body? So I think that's a place where I apply this information. As a Reiki practitioner, I learned pretty early on how to use the Reiki precepts and how I think about things, which is about being present in the moment, about bringing love and light into situations, but also about being able to understand time as foldable so that I can send a container of light and care to the future for a conversation that I haven't had yet. And so when I can remember to do that, I do that we're having a meeting. It might be a tough conversation or we want a really open conversation, whatever. It's not necessarily just for when things are hard. And I think that's something I try to remind myself, that witching and practice is not just for when hard times. But that, you know, that I can actually send an energy for myself, a support for myself forward. When I drive, I send light along the ways. I actually like to look at the little map, the little blue line, and just like send the light along the blue line so that there's clarity. There's a way, ways are made.
I love that.
I was like, practical tools, that. You know what I'm saying? It's one of my favorite things about learning with Dr. G and the community of soul shifters is that a lot of just practical ideas, like, all right, you have this problem. Here's how we can apply a practical solution.
This is what we can actually do.
When we were starting the school that I helped be a part of opening up here in New Orleans, I painted symbols of love and hope and Reiki into the classroom walls as a container for whatever beauty is happening. And you know, like that was a piece of just, you know, painting the words into the walls and actually painting Reiki symbols into beneath the paint. And I do that in houses whenever I paint in a house or a space that I'm in. Other ways, I'm a body worker. So touch.
Hallelujah.
I am a body worker. I'm saying it many times in my mind because it has been a 3-year period of not getting to practice. And I am in a
because of the COVID-19 devastator.
That and mostly because of song. Sitting in this seat, taking the spiritual assignment of Southerners on New Ground, which is incredible in lots of ways, but has been, that's the biggest sacrifice in some ways. Like, I have made that sacrifice.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
And I'm so desperate to get back to it, and will. I, inshallah, it will be soon. But that means that I'm, one of the ways that I use my skills and gifts and personal genius is in calling, like kind of calling to the body. So yeah. One, I really believe that my biome, so all that like yummy, wonderful, everything that makes me up that lives just off my skin and on my skin, when I'm working with someone, yeah, is then excitedly connecting to that person's biome. And so I think of themselves, yes, as I think of them as like a million little conversations whispering to each other, like, okay, you know, this is what you, that's, remember, right, and this is what I remember. And in that process, I know. So I may not, yeah, know from talking to someone. I know some things on paper, and I'm studied, you know, like I study a lot. But, you know, like someone comes and...
You're like, I've still got a journalist experience. Like, I go looking.
I look things up. I had to learn every muscle, its origin and insertion, and all of those things. And so I'm using that, mm-hmm, part of myself. But what really gets there is putting my hands on that person's body. So when someone's on my table, mm-hmm, I hear them. Like, I hear through my hands. And there are things that my hands know to do that my mind can only catch up to later. Yeah. And I think that's because I can channel what their body is asking for if I listen.
Directly.
And it, yep, requires a kind of emptying out to listen, and a kind of what I didn't understand when I started, but really understand more and more, is it requires a release of attachment to outcome. At a level, yeah, that actually Song has asked me to level up even more in, like where it's like I'm literally, I don't know if I will be able to help this hurt. I have to let go and just listen. And then as I'm listening, my body begins to be a tool of the body of the person who I'm working with, so that I know where to go. And clients have told me this, people who are on my table are like, how do you just know? And I'm like, I cannot with words fully explain why I know, yes, that disc is hurting. Like, or why I know.
It's so fascinating when you do it. I mean, it's wonderful. Yeah. It's wonderful, but it really is so remarkable when you do what you do. Like, I love getting to be in a position where I can interview you and also testify. Yeah. Because it is, you know, it spoils you, because then you go to folks and you're like, I need you to just know, like, to just put your hands on me and, you know, go where the need is and the pain, yeah, is and the stuff, the, you know, for my body, and I think a lot of bodies are like this, the place where I'm experiencing acute pain, mm-hmm, is rarely the place that's creating and causing that pain, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It's like that's where your body is trying to adjust and adapt to cover something,
exactly,
that is quietly pulling, yes, you. And then you always are like, yeah, well, let me go. Oh, I can hear somehow, no, follow, it's over, mm-hmm, here in this other hip. You're the first person who ever got me to understand that, like, I hurt in my left hip because my right hip was tight.
Yes.
You know, and I was like, wait, yes, what? The right hip's fine, Aisha. It's fine. And then you were like, let me just see what happens if I let this part go. And it's, you know, it's like life-changing little, mm-hmm, hacks that are like, mm-hmm, yeah, you know, it. I also want to ask you, in that listening, my experience of you is that you both feel what's happening in the body and you feel how spirit, mm-hmm, is happening in the body. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I learned early on to call in my own spirit guides of support, and I usually, yeah, offer a little kind of invocation prayer, you know, how the many ways to describe this. To, yeah, invite the spirit guides of the person that I'm working with and kind of invite them to be in communion. Like, what does this,
okay,
what does this body, this being need? And, mm-hmm, in that there's, yeah, like I'm letting that conference inform what I hear. And I think there's like the muscles remember things. Like we are our mind and our body and a spirit. And I believe that my existence is the alchemy of those things. So what my spirit is and who my spirit is informed by the body that my spirit is inhabiting. So when if my spirit could be separated from my physical body, it's a different thing when it's outside of my body. Yeah. And so it's like in that, it's the channel too. Like it is the kind of like an altar is a phone, like the body is the material representation. And I, one time working on someone, I had this kind of euphoric moment of realization that I'm like, oh, what if we are the somatic expression of the earth? Like, it is like through our bodies.
Wait, hold on. Say it again. I was like, I think you're correct.
Like, what if we are all the somatic experience of the earth? Like, so if, you know, when the earth is like, I want to feel cold, hot, sex, excitement, like, you know, orgasmic, weeping, like that is, we offer that. We are that.
Yes.
And, you know, as our plants, as our animals and birds, but like we are the way this earth home experiences a somatic, like, presence. Experiences, yes. Touch, you know? So I think that's so real to my body work that I'm like, your spirit is touchable through this practice.
I love it. You know, I keep trying to find ways to talk about what happens for me when a poem comes. Mm. And where I'm often like, I am writing this, but also too, there's some other impulse that is like sending it through and wanting it now.
Yeah.
Right. That's like very, you know, this way that you're just speaking about the somatic experience of the earth, where I'm like, this one's for her. Mm. This one's for something, whatever that is, that's much larger than myself. And it's, I think of a poem as, you know, this, like what you do with body work, I think sometimes I do with the collective through my poetry, yes. Right? So I'm like, I can work out this shoulder by bringing attention to what's happening here in this place in our heart, or, you know? So I really am like, vibrating off of that.
I love that. That's what muse is, right? That's why the idea of a muse was, I think, people trying to give a name to that experience.
I think so,
you know,
too.
Like, yeah.
So given the wide range of things that you're practicing right now, both things that are directly related to your movement work and things that are directly related to healing and shamanic path, which skills do you wish everyone had access to or was practicing in this time? In this apocalyptic
time. Ooh. I mean, I think listening is a big bottom line one. And I think that doesn't seem like a witch skill, maybe. It sounds much more mundane.
It's the main witch.
But it is the main one, like pay attention.
Yep.
Listening to self and the larger world, which is why I have really, you know, I've not been always a meditator. And I actually am one of those many people who were like, I don't know if I can sit for this long. In fact, I will credit you. It was learning from you in generative somatics and being like, you and Alta Star being like, have a sitting practice. And I was like, I don't know. If I sit still, I'm not good at it. And then I did it. And I realized that my capacity to drop in and pay attention is expanded exponentially. And so that means that I hear myself and others much more clearly. And I think I hear, like, the earth speaking much more clearly. And that guides me. So if I can just center and listen, That's a big one. And I think I wish for everyone to be able to just like quiet, sit, listen.
Yeah.
And then I think play and curiosity. I feel like there's something, the stakes are so high, and I really feel that for sure. Like, you know, we are in huge existential crisis battles, and we also, like, my best witching comes from being willing to play with the realities, like to find places of joy inside of, like, inside of anything, like of anywhere.
Yeah.
So experimentation and being willing to try some things, you know, I think having the rails and the listening, I think the listening and the play go together, because if you're listening to yourself and others, then when you are trying something, you can more, it's not about safety, but you can more, you can be more effective in pulling back when things have gone further than you mean to. So when you're playing, you also are listening. And that, I think those two things are really important. I think just actually being, like, relating to the moon as a marker of time and a guide.
Yes.
I wish everyone did that. And I think we're increasing. It's so exciting that so many more people have some kind of passing relationship to the moon that they're naming. But that, like, if we could, I think it would be hugely transformative. And I've seen it actually be, offer some shift in my current role to note the cycles of the moon and of the planet.
Yeah.
Like, just actually using that information to plan around, to notice what bodies need to do because of certain times of the season. I got on a little tiny, I was running late because literally I sat down and, like, my body was just like, blood! Because it's almost new moon.
Everywhere.
And I was like, what a blessing. And then was like, I need to go rearrange my life a little
bit. I'll be right back. No, that's right.
So
it's so, I had a song come the other day, Aisha, that was like, it's like, I'm bleeding from my vagina. Why are you calling on the telephone? And it was just like, it's like, I cannot believe that I'm expected to do this every month for, you know, for me, I'm not trying to have kids. So I'm like, I'm just supposed to do this for the chance of the possibility of some creation being possible through this body. And I'm still expected to do other things while it's happening. It's wild.
Anyway, it's really wild.
I know there's this whole movement now to actually have people organize, people who bleed, those of us who bleed, to actually structure our lives around that bleeding time, because it's like so much, and that time is tied to the moon time, right? It's like, what does it mean to actually be, to give into the cycle and to notice, like, my energy is hugely pouring out output, and then now my energy is, I need to be laid out on the bed. Like, I gave myself permission this time, because especially because I'm grieving, so I was like, you know what I'm gonna do is lay on my bed in my period panties. Watch alone and watch people forage for, you know, mushrooms out in the woods. And it's gonna be great.
Totally. And I think I believe that one of the other reasons for the cycle is a nonviolent blood offering. That was one of the ways I was taught.
I think so too.
So it's like a sacred, I mean, and I don't, you know, I don't think every individual one of us has to feel the same way about it, to name it as this kind of, like, force in the world that has sacredness to it. So even if I on a given day don't feel sacred about the blood pouring out me, or wish that it would change or
you
different.
Just reminded me that there's a blood spell I need to do before this period ends. Thank you. I'm like trying to get this land and I'm like, I need to take some blood to it.
Yes. One of the earliest witching tactics that I learned from one of my first boos was, you want something? Put some blood on it.
Yep. Got it. I'm like, right, duh. That's great. beautiful. Anything else? Any other practices you're like?
So, yeah, I mean, I think I definitely lean to and move towards tarot and astrology, especially in this time of leading an organization, to get information about what's happening, like pay attention to what the conditions might be. Like, we are in a strategic planning process right now or coming through. Yep. And when I tell you, like, the amount that it mattered to both listen to dreams, to what we were feeling, what we were noticing, what the trees were telling us, what the birds were telling us, whilst moving through this work of trying to make sense of what our direction is, review and look forward, look back and forward, was so necessary and a huge reminder of that we can use all of these tools in support of. So I may draw cards, you know, when, I mean, I will say the first year of this role was quite trying. I mean, it's been a huge, huge thing, you know, but, you know, especially, 2020, 2021. And I did a lot of, okay, I'm not sure, but let me pull some cards and see if the wisdom of the cards will help me remind me of what I know.
Yes.
Right. Because everything I think, and this is something I think is important to say to the sort of those energies in the world that I think are afraid of remembering these things because we've been told that they are wrong, or we've been told that they come from a place that's not logical or to be trusted, is that we're only listening to ourselves. Like, it's, you know, you're listening to your own medicine when you listen to yourself via tarot, via dreams, via divination, via all of these vehicles, through astrology. It's not telling you what to do. It's helping you understand what you know is to be done. So I think that's really important. And then, oh man, just like that, it went out of my mind. Oh, I do dream. Like, dream ritual is a piece of what I work with all the time. And I understand, especially from an amazing session that I will always remember with Alexis, Pauline Gums, that dreaming is a collective practice, you know? So that, like, I'm dreaming a piece of a story that is usually part of some, there's a message for us in the dream. So, I may have had a specific dream and then I may not know who all the us is, but it is a corner of a little, I'm just opening a curtain and seeing a little something. And often years can go by before I put those pieces into, right? That's like some kind of archive of dreams. And sometimes it's really immediate. Like, I basically dreamed the entire events of our strategic planning session, like, a few weeks beforehand. And it was really amazing. And I felt really brave enough and grateful to have built the kind of trust with my colleagues and comrades to be willing to talk about it. And that led to being willing to put that information to use. And I have such gratitude for being in a movement, organization, container that has room for that, even as we hold the multitudes of skepticism, of unclear, you know, of fear, of a whole world of prismatic geniuses who are in different places about how those personal geniuses can show up, you know?
I really love this. You know, it's so interesting to me because I think sometimes people are like, oh, you make real decisions this way. Like, you make your really big decisions this way. And I was like, like, I, especially when it comes to beginnings and endings, you know, I'm like, I have an intuition, but I also have tendencies. And because I am, Virgo with an Aries rising, I have a tendency towards starting things and thinking I can start things in an orderly way. Like, I gotta get it going, right? And I'm like, my intuition often knows whether I should or should not apply that starting magic to things. And the cards help me, figure out, right, what is the logical balance between the tendency and the intuition. And or sometimes my intuition is screaming at me very clearly what I need to do, and I don't want to, right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going. You can't make me. Other people are going to think badly about me or whatever. And then I turn to the cards, and the cards are just like, you don't need to worry about that. You just need to worry about this is the right decision or whatever it is. And that it has been so liberating for me, actually, to be like, I'm not on my own. Making these decisions, like I'm trusting myself, and myself is of service to something larger than myself. And I think that's, why to me, I want to awaken the intuition of so many people. Cause I'm like, if you're just following a sheep's path of whoever is telling you what to do, you're not hearing your part of our collective intuition, which we all need everyone to hear in order for us to figure out the next moves to make. And even when it's a battle, it's like, you need to hear your side of the fight so we can fight with integrity. Right now, I think there's so many people, so much of the oppression in the world comes from repressed intuition.
Yes.
And people being like, I cannot trust myself. Yeah. I've got to put my faith in someone else who will make me feel powerful. Yeah. And whereas when you really lean into your intuition, you feel powerful because you're like, oh, I'm just rooted into, I'm a mycelial thread. Yeah. I mean, of course I'm powerful because we are powerful.
Right.
I love talking with you.
Yes.
I love always talking with you. I was going to ask a question about doing witch work while you're healing, but you spoke to it already in multiple ways that I feel very satisfying for me. Which I have to laugh at trying to interview witches. So now I think you're my seventh or eighth. And it's so funny because y'all all anticipate the questions and answer them. And I'm like, great. I'll still slide in and, do a little light touch guidance, but generally I've never experienced this as an interviewer ever in my life that people are just like, I already know exactly what's coming. That makes me happy.
That's so beautiful.
And talking with you makes me happy.
And I just want to say to you a huge gratitude of that willingness to make the invisible visible that I have watched you do over the many years in big ways. I'm Scorpio, so I'm like, shh. I'm in the cut.
Can we tuck that under our big rock?
I'm underneath a cenote doing what I'm doing.
Well, that's my moon, right? So I'm just like, I'm always like, I can feel the pull of the cave at all times. And then I'm also like, and let's bring it into the light and share it. And then we can take it back to the kitchen.
Yeah. And I just, it's a hugely important and has been a real gift to our collective movement work and collective remembering that folks, that you've been willing to do this kind of magic work in, talk to people about it, be open about it, be upfront, and integrate it into actual movement work, using tarot in within, the movement tarot that you did, all of those things have increased our capacity to be, remember our technologies. It's just widened the field. Yeah. And so I'm really grateful where I sit right now for getting to witness that and benefit from how it has opened more space.
Thank you. It's so exciting. I feel like part of my maturing is just being like, oh, my position is like the town crier, right? It's like, I walk around, I learn things, I figure stuff out. But then a lot of what I'm doing is like, y'all, I got some body work. That is the bomb. We need all be doing the body work. Y'all, I took the somatics course. It is making me feel alive. Come on, take the somatics course. Y'all, I got this tarot deck. the wisdom be wisdoming. Okay. We all need a tarot deck. Like, I feel like a lot of my work in this world is to be like, when I find something that works, to uplift it and to be like, you know, I'm so curious about why so many of the things that work for so many of us that are direct access to ourselves and to spirit are the ones that, you know, I'm not curious. I'm less and less curious. I feel like I have a real clear sense of it now, but I'm like, these are things that give us direct access to our power. I want that, you know. I've been watching that TV show, The Power, which I don't know. It was a book. It was based on a book, and it's just really delicious. Yeah. You know, it's delicious contemplation because it's these women who basically a new power awakens in people. And it's like an electrical power that they can use to protect themselves. And it's like, I'm just like, I want whatever the grounded and rooted and benevolent version of that is. And I think that that's part of what we're doing all the time with each other.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I'm going to read a spell.
Yes.
To close us out as our, as our closing practice. And the spell that I thought would work that feels like kind of the place in between song and like Southerners on New Ground and your witchy work is this abolition spell.
Yes.
So
yes.
It goes like this. All that is light, break bars between teeth, grind bricks down to dust, explode a sun scale life force in each direction until the cages shed like dead skin. Brief steamy night, slip through the cracks like rain, nourish the soil, the parents who cannot hear their children tonight, and in the dreams of the babies, let them be held so they know to keep growing. Sun, 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 let them grow up strong. One tree, two trees, forests that break the foundations of slave culture, burst the seams of prison walls, find home beyond the trauma of this night. All that is light, beam into the hearts of parents who would ever let a child, any child, scream in terror where they came for safety. Find the crack in the spirit and fill it with gold. All that is darkness, abolish ICE, abolish slavery, abolish prisons, abolish borders, abolish colonialism, abolish our addiction to punishing everyone who needs healing. Solstice come, solstice go, solstice come, solstice go.
That made my hands warm. So be it.
I felt you. I love doing spells with other people. It's the best. All right. I love you so much. Thank you for taking your precious, miraculous time and spending it here with us.
Thank you
for your life of finding your power, finding your healing, finding your shamanic work. Thank you for your wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you.
And your leadership. Thank you for your leadership with Southerners on New Ground and all of it. I'm really grateful for you. I love. So, also, beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in for another episode of Witch School. We are produced by the delightful and humorous Zach Rosen. You can support this ongoing labor at patreon.com/IntoTheWorldShow. You can find us on Instagram at IntoTheWorldPC. We have given up pretending like we're on any other platform, and we'll see you next time. Shake these bones, shake these bones, oh, I gotta shake these bones, shake.